I just think we should really be more honest and real about everything that we do and not tell people that, for example, the customer's always right. The customer's not always right. The customer's wrong, actually, a lot of the time. Or they're actually not your customer, and that's why they're wrong. Right? So there's loads of these things. And when you realize that that's not your customer and they can't actually have an opinion about your business because they don't understand it, well, then you need to either educate them or accept that they're not your customer. And I got very emotional at the very start of when we opened Bird Hill, because I felt people were attacking our business and what we were trying to do, like give people education, educate people, bring people on a journey, educate staff, train people, educate customers. And then people writing one-star reviews, like hating on the business. And I'd attack them for writing the one-star review going, like, you know nothing. You don't know what I'm trying to do here. So how can you have an opinion on it?
Hey, quick heads up. If you're still in Windows 10, you need to know it's going out of support this October. That means no updates, no patches, just risk. Nostra can help. They're offering free upgrade consultations for businesses right now. Hit the link in the episode description.
Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code VOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20 and elevate your marketing game today.
Alan, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Are you the most hated man on TikTok or the most loved?
Oh gosh, hated man on TikTok. No. I get hate. I mean, I like it actually. I think it's necessary. It depends on what context. If it's about the price of coffee, no, probably not. If it's about having an adults only coffee shop, maybe.
I say that tongue in cheek. Yeah. You were one of the people I've seen do social best in 2025. You just understand it. What has got you so much attention?
You mean in 2025 or over the years?
Over the years, yeah. So if anyone, go to Old Barks Roastery on TikTok, whip out your phone right now as we're chatting, and look at your account. So what has been popping off, as the kids would say?
Kids don't say anything, they're not allowed. So I think what pops off is we always get a bit of attention for the fact that our roastery is adults only. So that's, we're always going to get that attention. And that's what happens when you, I suppose, disrupt an industry and you try and do something different. So we all need a point of difference. So that gets a bit of attention. Actually, what gets more attention more recently is, I suppose, our transparency around what coffee shops actually make in terms of turnover, what it really costs to open a coffee shop, because people are generally delusional. And then they have other people who tell them you can do it for 10 grand, like other coffee machine suppliers who try to get them to buy cheap, you know, per performing equipment, but just want the sale. And actually don't take a holistic approach to that person opening a business. So I think that kind of content right now is very engaging, and people really want, I think over the years, actually, if I go back to where I started in terms of coffee education, my biggest, insight into the coffee world was around, let's say around 2009, 2010, when I noticed that most coffee suppliers at the time, let's say the popular ones, were telling their customers that they needed to ring their coffee supplier if they wanted the grinder adjusted or if they wanted to know something about the machine, because that was a call out fee. Mm. And they were making sure they were keeping the guy on the road. And I thought that actually the industry needed much more transparency. We actually needed to educate people and to train people. So I think our best engaging content is actually where we educate people and we train people and we tell them, no, actually, this is, for example, how you can adjust your grinder, or this is how you can do something better. And by actually giving people real information and real statistics around how you brew coffee or how you open a coffee shop and what it's really going to cost you, people love that information because it's the truth. And it's when the facts are plentiful, the arguments are scarce.
What a line. We're off to a ripper already. This is really interesting. I love this because good content on social now has totally changed because a few years ago, how many followers do you have? Whereas now you can put up a post today and might get 500 views. You put up a post tomorrow and might get 500. You put up a post about it costs 100 grand to open a coffee shop.
Yeah. And you've 165,000 views.
You're going.
Off, I think at the time, 1,800 followers.
Yeah. I loved your little screenshot was, it's all bullshit. And I was like, I'm clicking on that straight away.
Yeah.
But you, like, that's the kind of essence of, like, social was so manufactured for so long. There was people telling you exactly what you wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Oh, go out and hustle. Go out and work. Like, just work harder than everybody else. You're like, that's all bullshit. That's all fluffy hand waving. Oh, just hustle, grind. Whereas you're like going, it will cost you this much to paint it, this much for the floors, this much for the machine, this much for your staff.
Yeah.
Like, what made you be so transparent? Because a lot of people gatekeep or they're afraid.
I think actually, when I look at everything in that we do, we try to be transparent because there is a sense of, what's this they call it? Like, there's fake, real. And real.
Okay, break right. That down for me.
Well, there's all these different types of realities, right, that we live in. So there's a fake reality, you know, and then there's stuff that's real. So what we're doing right now is real, right? But you could AI this and that's a fake real. Right?
Okay.
And then you've got stuff that's fake, like it's pure fake. It's actually two AIs talking to each other, which is fake. But there's what I think is, and it probably comes out, I know actually it comes out in my answers to the Google reviews. Like, I just think we should really be more honest and real about everything that we do and not tell people that, for example, the customer's always right. The customer's not always right. The customer's wrong, actually, a lot of the time. Or they're actually not your customer and that's why they're wrong. Right? So there's loads of these things. And when you realize that that's not your customer and they can't actually have an opinion about your business because they don't understand it, well, then you need to either educate them or accept that they're not your customer. And I got very emotional at the very start of when we opened Bird Hill because I felt people were attacking our business and what we were trying to do, like give people education, educate people, bring people on a journey, educate staff, train people, educate customers. And then people writing one-star reviews, like hating on the business. And I'd attack them for writing the one-star review going, like, you know nothing. You don't know what I'm trying to do here. So how can you have an opinion on it? Yeah, you're laughing at me.
I love it. That's why I'm so refreshed. I was like, I came in this morning, I said to Ben, I was like, we're going to have good chats today, Ben. We've got some good people coming in because there's so much manufactured stories out there or people are unwilling to tell their story. We talked about this a few minutes ago.
They're afraid to tell people you're wrong.
Because they're afraid to hear the wrong answer. But you said something there and I don't hear this very often on the pod. They're not your customer. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
They're not your customer.
Yeah, we're not building a product
for
everybody.
Don't go after everybody. If you're for everybody, you're for nobody.
Yeah, that's
you're
true.
You're this boring, bland, middle of the road. You're just there.
Yeah.
You're in a retail park. You serve a purpose. They can pass an hour or they can just get a coffee in the road. You serve a purpose, right? There's no real emotion involved. Whereas when you try to do something different, it's weird, right? Where you are is like kind of the blue ocean strategy. You're kind of creating this brand new kind of idea from something else. Whereas most people go where the red ocean, where it's really busy and noisy and choppy, and then can't understand where they can't compete.
Yeah, but if we don't, we don't challenge customers and the industry, I look around and I wonder who else is going to do it. Like in our space at the moment, like who else is going to do it? There have been plenty of people who have made progress and we're always standing on the shoulders of giants, right? There's loads of people in the industry that have made progress at different times. And I'm sure I'm not spearheading the industry. I don't mean it sound like that. I just mean we're trying things that are different and we're trying to give people other reasons to go to coffee shops and other reasons to experience coffee in a different way in what we do. And, if we don't do it, like I'm kind of a little bit annoyed that we're still the only roastery in the country that has some pricing architecture, right?
And what does that mean?
So that there's an entry point and an exit point. So you can come in at a €5 a cup or you can buy a cup that's €20, right? So the pricing architecture means that depending on which country of origin you want to taste, the price is relevant based on where we source that coffee and what it actually costs us. And like I see it in other countries, you can go to London and you can experience that in places like Special Guest or Shot. And I love that they do that. But like this very, I don't know if there's another place in Ireland that does. I'd love to find another place in Ireland that actually has pricing architecture built into their price per cup. And I don't just mean 50 cent for milk. You know, I mean, based on the country of origin that they charge.
That's in most other kind of service industries, you know, if you want like this level steak or that level steak. Yeah. Why is it not in coffee?
Because people are afraid, because I think it's a commodity and I don't think coffee actually gets the respect generally for the craft that it is. And that's a whole other conversation, which we might get to later on in terms of creating a sustainable environment for coffee or a sustainable industry. But I think it's because people have always treated it as a commodity and don't actually understand, like people actually don't understand coffee. And that's no disrespect to people, but there's so much going on in terms of putting that cup into the hands of people consistently and perfectly every time that people just don't have the respect for it. They don't understand it. So what we try to do then is, well, peel back that curtain and go, we'll have a look at this. This is exactly what it takes to put this cup of coffee together. And that's why we've built that space in Bird Hill to give people that insight so that they can walk around the counter or they can choose different coffees or they can have a different experience in terms of actually the process of buying the cup of coffee. And that's actually, you know, a unique experience that they won't get anywhere else in the country, but it makes them think. And that's why pricing is important, because if it was the same price as every other cup in every other coffee shop, well, then they wouldn't think about it. So we actually need pricing architecture to make people stop and think and go, it's how much for a cup of coffee? Like, because you want that moment. You want that. That's almost an inertia moment of,
yeah,
it's flight or fight, right? And although they can see it on the menu, they're kind of considering it, going, do I really want to pay this the first time? And then they do that and they taste Nicaragua and they go, wow, there was actually flavor in that. Now we've moved from a whole dynamic of tasting coffee to understanding what flavor is. And it's a completely new universe. And that's why it's so important.
How many, say on an average week, your 20 euro cup of coffee,
yeah,
how much of that would make up your average sales?
Oh,
do you roughly know?
Yeah, I do. I looked at this. I think from the 12 euros up to 20 is about 15% of our sales.
Okay. So it is sizable.
It's considerable, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people come to taste those exclusive coffees that are not readily available everywhere in the country, like anywhere in the country. They're not on bar. And I get this a lot. People ask what's different. And I say, well, we've 8 or 9 or 10 different coffees readily available on the bar. So you can choose Honduras, Nicaragua, or a guest coffee from like a geisha from Daniel Horbutt. And they're all ready to brew on the bar. It doesn't take 15 minutes to dial in that coffee and get it ready for you. It's there and available. So if you're a group of 4 people, you can have 4 different countries of origin and 4 different price points to taste those. And when people, you know, so when people do that, they look to experience them. So people look to experience those different types of coffees, much like we used to go and look to experience, you know, drinking different types of wines off a wine list or experiencing different types of restaurants. If, you know, where are you going to go for dinner tonight? Is it, what am I choosing? Am I choosing based on price or based on the experience? Is it Indian or European continental or Italian? So it's about giving people an opportunity to experience different flavors, try different countries and understand coffee deeper. But yeah, 15% of our coffees above the way we've broken down our menu now is simple and complex and in the top end of complex. So from Kenya, Costa Rica, geishas, and like micro lots. There's 4 coffees there that are between 12 and 20, and people come to experience those, yeah.
What's been the wildest reaction you've had from people coming in? Like, do people get it?
In terms of price? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I think we learned a lot at the start, because at the very start, at the very start when we opened Bird Hill, we had the menu on an iPad and you could slide through the pages. So you had the types of drinks that we would make and then the prices after. And I think the wildest reaction was just somebody didn't really actually realize that there was a price difference maybe per cup. And then they were just annoyed. And that was kind of back on us because we didn't communicate that
Okay.
before they bought. So then they end up in this embarrassing situation where they've chosen and they're asked to tap. And then they're like, how much? Mm. And that's back on us because just the communication wasn't really
the
good.
The journey wasn't there.
The journey wasn't there, yeah. What's the royalty reaction? People actually don't react that much at the till. If people are dissatisfied about it, they're more likely to express it online than actually deal with it there in the moment. And this is, I find
standard
this,
Irish thing. How was the meal? Yummy. Yeah. TripAdvisor, worst meal I've ever had in my life.
So this week's review, like this week's one star review, I should do like a, this week's one star review is.
Now there's a new series for you.
There's a new series. So that'd be easy because every summer and every midterm break, we'll just make it about adults only and no kids. And then every other week, it'll just be someone's giving out about price. But this week's was about somebody who, I think they had Brazil and they couldn't, you know, $5.50 for their Brazil coffee and they didn't even like it. and it's like, okay, but there are eight other coffees you could have chosen.
Yeah.
And the fact
it's on you.
It's on you. Yeah. Yeah. Like, this is like my horse didn't win. It's like, that's not my fault. You know, every customer is presented with at least two coffees. They're shown the beans. They're given a portion pot of the tin of coffee with 19.5 grams in that tin. That's their coffee they're going to get. The portion pot is shaken up a bit like, the old Maxwell House ads where they'd have but the portion.
There is some nice theater to it.
Yeah. There's theater, right? So the portion pot is shaken up and it's presented to you and you can smell, you know, I'm all about the sensory experience. So you can smell the beans. And then if you don't like the aroma that you're presented with, you can ask to smell another coffee or you'll be presented normally with a choice. So it'll be like this week, it's more likely going to be Honduras and Brazil. And you can choose between two. So if you've chosen Brazil because it's the cheaper and then you don't like it, that's on you.
One of the best headlines I ever saw, and I just knew you were a master marketer when I saw this headline in the Sunday Times, was it was like the adults only coffee shop that charges €15 for a coffee. No kids allowed, but dogs can come.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but that's not a lie.
But it was amazing. I was like, what a headline.
Yeah.
That's just gold because you've just got so many people who either love or hate that straight away.
Yeah. So it is vociferous at times, you know, people. And I kind of, what is it? It's like, you know, popping off a grenade and throwing it in and it just explodes. That I think got us. So here's the mad thing about press. Like you obviously got to leverage off it, right? But that got us into, I think what happened to, yeah. So that Sunday, here's what actually happened on that Sunday. Sunday Times, I was in Dublin. The article came out and I drove down from Dublin to Bird Hill and at 6 o'clock I got a phone call from News Talk asking would I be willing to discuss the price of coffee, and I said of course I will, I'll be in studio in the morning. Now I had just driven back, so I dropped Siobhan back home and I came back up to Dublin and I stayed around the corner and I was in the studio the next morning. And this, you know, just generally talking about marketing, but this is the importance of, you know, making sure that you get there and you get in. This is a top tip for anybody. If you're invited to do a radio interview, get into the studio and do the interview in the studio. Because what I didn't realize at the time was that they were going to record it, which is comes to another story. But I didn't realize they were going to record it. So it was going to end up on their TikTok or on their Instagrams. But I always feel if you're in studio, you've got a better chance to argue your case because if you're on the end of a phone line, they can mute your mic or they can, you know, we finish talking to him and your mic gets turned down. Whereas if you're in the studio, you can at least shout across the room and you can still be heard.
But you also get a rapport. They can understand you before you go on. There's a way more nuance to it.
Yeah. And you can make eye contact and you can go, can I come in on this point? Or, you know.
Yeah. They can sense that you're like ready to go again. Yeah.
And I think that, so we ended up getting, so the Sunday Times wrote an article on that price point and the pricing architecture of the menu. And it was all true. And then we got on News Talk the next morning and we went from News Talk onto RTE and we were still on RTE by Friday afternoon. Like we got a whole week. I think the exposure that week was north of 5 million viewerships, listenerships or attention and engagement.
And mass listenership as well.
Yeah. And it's actually all validation. So it's brilliant because what it does for, it just keeps you front of mind. And that's what we're trying to do all the time, is leverage off our unique selling points, reinforce the message that this is not, like, if someone says, yeah, we're going to go for €15 coffee, you know that that's not going to be an ordinary experience. You know, you're not going to be expect to walk into a, you know, a 500 square foot unit on Thomas Street and get a coffee to go. Like, that's not the expectation there. You're expecting a little bit more. So I want people expecting more, because I want our staff to be a challenge, but also be to deliver, right? And then I want people thinking of it differently. I want them considering that this is not going to be a speedy transaction. This is going to take some time, and to give it the time that we want them to spend there. So yeah, that all rolled in nicely to get us some great press, and that's the game. Just got to play the game.
Did that translate to visits?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're very much up in Bird Hill this year. And that's on the back of, I suppose, we've had strong years and a bit of a kind of a rough ride post-COVID, because you don't, at the time when you're going through it, you don't really know how the landscape is going to, where you're going to land on the landscape. And though while COVID was very successful for us, because we were able to make very quick decisions, I was able to make quick decisions. I say we, but the team just do what I ask, really, which is great. That's the right reaction.
Well, you get all the responsibility and all the credit if it works, all the pain if it doesn't.
Yeah. So I think that was, so during COVID, we could make decisions fast and we could move. But on the way out of COVID, we there was a bumpy ride. So some weeks were very busy, some weeks were very quiet. Some purchasing was different. Behavior was different. We really didn't know how we were going to, I don't know, like, finish the year. So that was kind of 22-23, and then by the time we came into 24, it started to just balance out. I mean, we decided that we had to, I suppose the thing about business now, and just talking about it loosely, is you've got to be fluid. You know, you've got to accept that things change, and there's a great quote, which is, you got to focus. So it's follow one course until success, FOCUS.
I've never heard that one, actually. Yeah, I like that.
You know, it's like focusing on what we do and what we really do really well, and making sure that we build around that experience and deliver that. So there was a period of reevaluation of what we actually offer in Bird Hill. And then we ended up having like a sustainable, I'd say, call it 2024, when everybody else was kind of still trying to figure stuff out and figure out the market. You know, like in 23 and 2024, we were getting vast amounts of competition from people who had opened horse boxes, and they're all scraping, you know, 50 customers a day away from you, and that all adds up, you know. Yeah. 50 over there, 50 over here, they're going to the GA club, they're going to wherever, you know, and it's not that they're not coming to us, it's just that offering is more convenient to wherever they finish their session, right? And whereas before, maybe people might have gone to the gym and they'd train, and then they might go home, and then they'd come to us for a coffee experience. Now there's a horse cart at the end of the drive. So they go to the gym, they grab their coffee, they go home, and they're going, well, I don't need to go out for coffee now, I've done that. So we lose that cup. And when I looked at the landscape of where our coffee sales, where our drink sales, where our takeaway sales, I felt we had to kind of, you know, we had to, I suppose, crystallize what it is that we're doing and what we're offering, and try and make that offering better. So is all the press good? Has it come into the bottom line? Yes, it has, because we've also run with it, and we've followed our course on, you know, until like success is not permanent. You know,
it's the only thing constant is change. That's what I find so amazing at the minute. Everyone is in this state of absolute panic and chaos because everything's changing. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think the rate of change has accelerated a lot. I think we're now used to get cycles of maybe 3 to 5 years where things would kind of stay the same, whereas now it's changing probably on a 12-month cycle. Pace of change has quickened a lot, but then you have to quicken a lot. You have to be faster than the rate of change.
Yeah, and I think as a small business, like we're a small business, I can make decisions that, like, we can make a decision this week to put something on a menu next week. Or we can make a decision this week to change the offering in Bird Hill, let's say, and only do takeaway or only do sit-in, and, you know, maybe do something mad like that. Or open up down in Cork. When we opened up in Cork years ago, it was on a whim, you know, it was on a gut feeling that this was the right thing to do. And it's probably one of the reasons why we've never taken on investment is because I don't like that, you know, money comes with opinion type stuff.
The price to be paid.
Yeah.
Always.
Always. And I think you've got to be, yeah, definitely in this period in business, you've got to be very fluid. That doesn't mean that you completely need to change your operation, but you can't be as precious about what it is that you've tried to create. And I suppose ego might get in the way of that sometimes as well. But yeah, you've got to be very mindful that markets change and things shift. And for me anyway, we've got to stay away from trends. Try and stay away from trends and just keep true to our core of what it is that we're actually offering. So what are we actually offering? Where's the value that we're actually giving people? What does that look like from the customer's point of view?
How do you spot what the difference between a trend is and something that's actually something you need to adopt?
Dubai chocolate. Like one of these.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Like that's, you know what I mean? Like,
I know what you mean.
Yeah. I think
if you stick to the fundamentals and then avoid those kind of fatty things that blow up and blow off.
So I think, well, I'll give you an example. So in coffee, what's not a trend is probably syrups in coffee. Right, they're not a trend, right? People like syrups and coffee, okay? Vanilla syrup, hazelnut syrup, like young people, let's say, right? Because their experience of drinking coffee is buying coffee from places that don't source really good coffee. They source really cheap coffee.
Starbucks.
You can say that. But the coffee is brewed really badly and it's very bitter. Yeah. Right. So the only way to correct that is to add sugar.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
I do always laugh at the menus, like the seasonal menus. I always like when I go to the UK because I look at the calories. I'm that much of a nerd.
Yeah.
Like 1,000 calories.
Yeah, for your venti.
Wow.
Right.
In one cup.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, two pumps of vanilla, whatever it is, right? So that's a trend. So that's not a trend, sorry. That's something that's a constant. That's going to be part of the gateway drug that gets people into those social spaces, right? So actually we need that, right? But other trends would be, I think, things like the Dubai chocolate. Now, we could jump on the Dubai chocolate thing in, let's say, in Bird Hill, where we serve mochas, right? It's about as close as we get to serving something that leans into an alternative drink, right? Yeah. That's not a coffee drink. So we serve mochas, but we could have added to the menu a Dubai chocolate mocha, right? Like that would be following the trend, I think. Mm. And we try and stay away from stuff like that. We try to be purists, I suppose, or we try to respect, I think, we try to respect what it is that the farmer has created in the flavor of the cherry. And we try and put that in a cup, right? Without bastardizing the flavor.
Yeah.
That's hard in some respect because we need to create a gateway product that means our demographic at 20 to 25 who want to come out and experience Bird Hill want something sweet. So we have to have a mocha on the menu.
Okay.
Right. So that's our suggestion. We do a mocha.
Okay.
Or what we also have is something like we make a vanilla milk. So instead of using a syrup, we make a vanilla milk.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. And we make lattes with vanilla oat or vanilla dairy. And so now there's a flavor of vanilla, but it's not your syrup. But you can still get the nuanced flavor of that Honduras coffee or that Costa Rican coffee through that. So in time, what you'd hope is, and what actually happens is with all of us, our palates develop. So at 20 or 18, you're drinking your vodka blackcurrant or whatever it is, right? Your Guinness with blackcurrant and stuff, you know, peach snaps, you know, if you drink like in alcohol terms. Yeah. And we're drinking these vanilla lattes if you're going to Starbucks. And then your flavors progress. So you taste wine for the first time or you taste a whiskey for the first time or you taste teas or you taste coffee, real coffee. And a lot of people come to us now and they go, God, I actually didn't realize coffee could taste like that. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, because you've been drinking the other stuff, you know, the other black stuff.
And you made a good point, though. People travel now. People are traveling way more. So people's palates are considerably changing from what they would have been 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, big time. And I think people have worldwide experiences of having lived in Australia, having visited farms. So we've got two things going on. We've got actual real experiences, which are our people have been to Australia, they've worked there, they've lived there, they've come back and they want, you know, the coffee standard that they've seen there or New Zealand or wherever it is. And then they've got these emotional experiences of having visited Nicaragua or Costa Rica or Brazil or Ecuador, wherever it is. And they have an emotional attachment to that place. And they might have their own flavor memory of stuff that they've eaten there, you know, and they want to kind of recall that from, oh yeah, I remember the days.
Well, smell and flavor, smell and like, you know, memory getting activated together are hugely powerful.
Yeah.
Talk to me then. You made a really great video recently. It's one of the favorite I've seen of like, can't open a coffee shop for 10 grand.
Yes. Yes.
What was the thinking behind that? So you said it costs 100 grand to open a coffee shop, not 10 grand. Can you explain it? Break that down for me.
Yeah. So people are delusional, really, that they're either someone has told them that they'll get it done for 10 grand and has given them false information or wants to encourage them to do it. I don't know how many coffee shops I've actually opened, maybe 6 or 7. Maybe 11 or 12. Maybe 13. I can't remember how many I've opened, but I know for a fact, and I can give the detail on it. This is why I'm so kind of riled by these kind of comments. People thinking they can open a coffee shop for 10 grand. You can't buy a decent coffee machine for 10 grand, right? This is like people saying, I'm going to race Formula One in a Toyota Yaris. Like, it's not doable. Yeah, you can do it. Like, you can try and do it, but like, just to get to that point, you still can't do that. So for 10 grand, people are often at, like, they're told they can open a coffee shop for 10 grand for whatever reason. And it's maybe you can start, can you start a coffee business for 10 grand is probably a better question. Can you start a coffee business for 10 grand? And the reason I'm so against that whole idea of that is because people actually are not treating the industry with the respect that it deserves. For me, the problem with the coffee industry is that there are so many, the barriers to entry can be so low. You can go and rent a coffee machine for 300 or 400 euros a month if you can get one. You can rent a coffee machine for 300 or 400 euros a month, and you could throw that up on a counter somewhere or in a horse box, and you could do that, and you'll be the one making all the coffees. You'll be the one emptying out the bucket at the end of the day and cleaning up all the waste and cleaning the machine and going to the cash and carry and buying all the stuff and working 12, 14, 16 hours a day. And your ego will tell you that you're doing a great job. And all your friends will tell you you're doing a great job. And what you've just done is you haven't even bought yourself a job at that stage. You've just put yourself into a situation that you can't get out of, because now you're going to be working your balls off and not making any money. And I suppose my real interest is I want to really make people see the industry as a more sustainable industry in all aspects of that. So if you're the kind of person who thinks you can open a coffee shop for 10 grand, you're probably the kind of person who doesn't want to pay your staff any more than minimum wage. And you're probably the kind of person who isn't going to invest in actually educating your staff or bringing people on a journey or encouraging them to better themselves. And I know that's a generalized statement, but you're really not thinking about it deep enough. And I suppose I want people to think about it deeper. People always say to me that Blank Street is worth $500 million. And they started in a coffee trailer. And yeah, I get that. But they've also had massive rounds of investment. So they've actually taken it from one stage of to another. And so that's Blank Street Coffee for people that don't know. Have a look it up.
There's always an exception to every rule. And I think people are too much focused on the exceptions. They're focused on the Elons, the Jobs, the Zuckerbergs of the world. When in reality, 99.9% of us are in the other category. Yeah. We're in the grafter category. We're in the people who need to like logically build a business, do good things. But you're making a really good point there. Are you building a job or are you building a business? They're two very different things.
Yeah. And it's, I get it. People want to start somewhere, but I also want them to be realistic. So if your goal and if your dream is to have a coffee shop, but your job is actually in media, right? Or your job is in accounting and you're getting paid for that. Well, then that's your skill, not running the coffee shop. So lean into that skill over time, open your coffee shop and crunch the numbers if you're the accountant, or if you're the media person, well then go tell your story and use that and pay yourself a few quid every week because you're doing that job as part of the business, and surround yourself with people who are going to do it much better than you and actually who are going to run the business. But I think I want to beat the drum about actually making the industry more sustainable. And that's what I'm trying to get at. We don't want people taking shortcuts. That's like people trying to tell me you can open a restaurant for 50 grand because it should be five times what it's going to cost you to open a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. Right? And you can't open a restaurant for 50 grand. You can't genuinely open a restaurant that's going to turn over 20, 30, 40 grand a week and expect that you can do that for 50 grand, right?
But so 2 weeks taken. So you're saying it costs 2 weeks. There's an entry cost to every business.
Yeah. So let's demystify this whole idea of that you can do it for 10 and actually have a go at it and do it properly. And let's build really good coffee shops. Let's build really fucking good coffee shops and really good customer experiences and put real money in and get real money back out at the end of it.
Real money back out. Talk to me about this, right? So you reckon 100 grand is the figure?
I reckon 100 grand is a really good number if you want to build a coffee shop. Now, I just mean something like a coffee bar like we've built in Limerick City. So if people want to go visit Limerick City, Main Street, have a look at Gucci Coffee Bar. There's 100 grand there spent on that building. It's all in. It's a little bit less than 2,000 square foot. You can see 1,000 square foot of it. And you'll see the terrazzo counter. You'll see the coffee machines. And you'll see the space, the large windows, the building outside is a restored building, lovely architecture, and it's beautifully painted. So there's 100 grand put into that unit. And that is a good footprint for what just a coffee bar could look like. And people can get a sense of, this is what I'm going to get for my money, right? So have a look at that. I'm not saying you need to have 100 grand in your pocket. What I'm saying is it's going to cost you 100 grand to create it, right? So whether you borrow 50 grand from your uncle, or you've got 20 grand, or you want to put 20 grand on deposit and the bank will give you 50 grand and you're going to lease the other bit of equipment for 30 grand, whatever way you've got to fund that, there's no way that you can do it. You can create a really serious operation in a coffee shop without it going to cost you 100 grand. You mightn't pay that out in the first year, but it's going to cost you 100 grand to do that. And over the next 3 or 5 years, you're going to pay back that 100 grand. And obviously the sooner you can pay it back, the better. Because then, well, if you're paying back 20 grand a year over 5 years, now there's an extra 20 grand in your pocket. And now, if you're doing less, at least 10 grand a week in turnover, you've got 40 or 50 grand a year in terms of profit. And you can bank that. And you can actually start to rebuild.
So it's business maths. You are taking a financial analysis approach to building the business. And it's also reality, right? You know, if you put 100 grand into something, you're going to make that work. You're going to sweat that asset. You're going to make that work. For someone puts 10 grand into something, I've seen this a lot recently. Yeah. I saw it very close up recently, a place open nearby where I live. And I was like, geez, I don't think they've thought this through. And they were gone within 9 months, right? You know, and you can kind of see, I just don't think this is thought through because of all the reasons, the litany of reasons you just outlined perfectly there. And making it more sustainable. Hospitality has this kind of reputation of like, oh yeah, sure, they're gone again. Two years time, they're open and closed, open and closed, open and closed. Yeah. And there's this acceptance that that's how it should be. And you're kind of going, I don't think so.
No.
I think we're just following the pattern of making the same mistakes over and over and over without truly sitting down to analyze, going, why is it they can't make any money? Now, look, there's a load of factors going on at the minute in terms of like cost of living and all that kind of crack. Mm. But like you're up in Bird Hill this year, you know what I mean? In a time when things are relatively challenging. So I think it's about being more intentional.
We're up across all of our sites.
Wow.
Right. Not just Bird Hill. The only site we can't measure quite yet is Cork to any real degree. Like it is up in Cork in Paul Street, but there's a lot of development going on around in the area. So I don't know whether we're actually up or whether the whole shopping centre is up or things like that. So it'll take a bit of time to balance down. But I think I was going to say you're right because I'm right. You're just endorsing me. But
there we go.
Yeah.
That's how I do this podcast. Yeah. You know what I mean? I got to sound clever some way. So just repeat back the things you've told me and package it up as my own. When you see the clip online later, it'll just be me saying that.
Yeah. No, but it is about warning people off. Like, don't get into this false sense of security that you can do it for 10 grand. Like, that's what we're coming back to. It's like, yeah, you could do it for 10 grand, but you'll do it really badly and really poorly, and you'll just end up in there trying to scrape by. And that's not what really I would love to champion for the industry. We want people to build really great experiences for people and really invest in delivering great coffee across the country. So do it as best you can.
Yeah, you did a great breakdown. I think you kind of mentioned it there, but how much you need to turn over per week in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
And I kind of keep laboring this point about the figures you've outlined, because I think it's, we talked about earlier, like coffee's one of those industries where everyone has an opinion and everyone reckons they could have a crack at it.
Yeah.
It's that psychological phenomenon of it's dangerous that you know a little, not enough to actually know it's a bad idea, but you know a little to get you going. You made a great point recently about breaking down the figures. And that's why I labor this point, is that people need to understand the kind of raw mechanics of running a coffee shop. You said there was a figure per week you have to make a coffee shop sustainable. What is it?
Yeah, so 10 grand a week, I think, is the number. Now, I'm pretty sure that probably applies to most businesses, but that'd be a good starting point, like 10 grand a week. And the reason I say 10 grand a week is because if you're doing 10 grand a week, well, then your labor bill is going to run at about 170 grand a year. So maybe 3 grand, a little bit north of 3 grand a week, right? Which means now you have a choice. You can either put yourself in there on a grand a week and you can work there, and or you can surround yourself with a team of people that will also work with you. Because the other choice is if you're only doing 3 or 4 grand a week, well, now you're it. Right? You've bought yourself a job.
You're it.
Whereas if you've got turnover, now turnover is not the answer to everything. And I like, you still want to make money, but I think there's a chance to make money if you're doing 10 grand a week. That's the point. There's a chance you'll make money. There's a chance you'll be able to wash your face with the business. There's a chance you can pay yourself a decent wage. It used to be 500 quid a week. Right now, people, we need a grand a week minimum. If you're the business owner. And that's if you want to be tied into it. But also it means that you've got some money coming in. You can afford to pay your bills, pay your suppliers on time. You can afford to pay for advertising or media, or you can have proper budgets for stuff. And at 10 grand a week as a number, net of sales, that gives you a starting point, you know. So what does that mean? 6 or 9 months into business, you should be looking to get to that number. That's what I'm saying. And you've got to be realistic. You're not going to get that number straight off, like in most cases, right? There will be the outliers, but you're not going to get that number straight off. You've got to try and work towards that. And in every site that we open, we work towards that number and then we try and push past it. And it's like, how fast can we get to 10 grand a week per site? That's the first thing. How fast can we get there and how far beyond it can we get? Mm-hmm. And then the next number becomes 15. You know, and the next number becomes 20. And it's like, how do we drive on? But I think 10 grand a week as for people that are coming into the industry or people that exist in the industry that are not doing that number, it's a reality check. It's like, how much do I have to put into this so that I can turn 10 grand a week? The answer is 100 grand. And then how much do I have to do every week to make this sustainable? The answer is 10 grand. And then how much more than 10 grand a week can I do? And how much money can I make out of it? And that's on a macro level, they're the numbers. It's 10 grand a week to turn over. It's 100 grand you got to invest. And it's 500 grand a year minimum in terms of turnover. And that is a 2.5-3 million business over 5 years. So you can't really create that sustainably. And there will always be outliers with a 10 grand a week input or 10 grand investment originally.
Like, that's gold. That's just pure logic. That is exactly this figure, this much per week, this much per year. People are so scared to actually put their figures out and go, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
Everyone's tiptoeing around it. And you make brilliant points there about, like, and I see this all the time. Founders will start without an inherent plan of where they need to get to. And, oh, I just won't pay myself for the first couple of years. And that breeds this really weird phenomenon then. Of like, they don't think about how much money they need to be making. They're like, oh, we'll just get through the first couple of years. I'm like, no, because then you're developing the business all wrong.
Yeah.
If you're 2 years in, you still can't pay yourself. You've just wasted 2 years of your life.
And the money you put in.
Right? The opportunity cost as well. Yeah, this is another thing people don't talk about. They could have done one of your ideas, or they could have went and got a job for 150 grand a year.
Yeah.
That's 300 grand opportunity cost you've lost. It's those things. You need to be really realistic. Look, entrepreneurs are a bit crazy, right? We can be open about that here. You're a bit tapped. You've no real logic about, like, if you knew what you knew now, you wouldn't have started, right? They all say that. You know, everyone's like, if I knew what I had to go through to get where I am, I wouldn't have done it. But that's it. It's just bred into us, just the way we are. But you can be smart about it. You can rein in your bad impulses by following advice like this and kind of going, look, hold the horses just for a minute and let's run some numbers here.
Yeah.
I always do the, what's your hour worth?
Yeah.
For young entrepreneurs, I always kind of go, because it can be really hard to kind of get them to think in those levels, but I'm going to steal all your stuff. What's your hour worth? Mm. How much do you think you should earn per hour? Yeah. Oh, you know, 20 quid. Okay, what's your burn rate per month? How much does it cost you to be alive as a human?
Yes.
Let's run the numbers now. Let's do quick maths, right? Mm. Rent, having the crack, whatever, blah, 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 blah. Oh, it's 3 grand.
Yeah.
Like, okay, but you said you're worth 35 quid an hour.
Yeah.
That's, we've a mismatch here somewhere.
Yeah.
Let's work backwards. And I do that thing with you as well. It's like, what's the end result at the end of the year? What would I need to be doing? But then you think of staff. You're like, oh, just work it. I'm like, what about a day off?
Yeah, what about a day off?
What about a day off? But what about that mad thing? Like, they're like, what about a day off? And there's this real weird hustle mentality.
Yeah.
Like it's some badge of honor to be in the office.
Way overrated, man.
It rots me when I see it. And people are propagating, oh, I'm in the office, it's 10 o'clock on a Monday. That shows me you don't have your shit together.
Absolutely.
That shows me you're not in control of what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing. And it's narcissism.
Right. Oh my God.
It's unbridled narcissism. Yeah, yeah. Look at me. Look at me. A narcissist can't tell whether attention is good or bad. They just want attention.
Right. Okay.
Right?
Yeah. So I'm not going down that rabbit hole.
I was just baiting you in there. I was teasing the hook in the water there, trying to get you going. But it's true. Like people have this weird thing. And I was like, nah, I'd rather be at home putting my 2-year-old to bed and reading her in bedtime story. Whatever that takes to get there, this thing of like, oh, you know, hustle till 11, 12 o'clock at night. There are periods, and someone explained this to me brilliantly. It's not about like, you know, work-life balance. It's about harmony across the year.
Yeah.
Because like you're opening a new site, right? That's going to be all hands on deck, right? That's going to be the 12, 14, 15 hour days.
No, it won't.
Oh, nice.
No.
Okay.
We finish 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. I'm going to go on to the
gym. The gap.
Yeah, go training. Like it's absolutely not about that.
Really?
Yeah. Like it's not about.
So you've developed a system to be able to handle those excess times.
Just understand what's priority. Like my whole journey from 2009 to here has been, what would you call it? Time. I've sacrificed time spent working. So I've decided not to work to spend time with my kids.
Nice.
Because that's actually the priority. Like I don't get this whole, like, if I start getting messages after 5 o'clock, I'm getting triggered. I'm like, stop messaging me. We're finished for the day. Work is done. I'm going training. I'm going playing golf with Callum, you know, off to the driving range, or I'm going driving with Siren in the car, teaching her how to drive, whatever the task is. But, you know, anything. Even when we're driving, my daughter might start talking about work. That triggers me. So, you know, because she works.
But you've obviously developed this over time, right? You've become...
Well, I tell you what happened. I went through a divorce in 2009. And I ended up only... My only option at the time was that I could work 1 week and I'd take the kids the other week.
Ah.
And then I realized that actually... So 1 week might be like this double espresso worth of work, you know, this highly concentrated, huge workload. And then the next week, I had to take the foot completely off the pedal. And I had to do the school runs, do the collections, do the lunches, do all that, and have like a 20-hour week. And while I didn't think that that was actually doable, what I realized was that it was completely doable. Mm. And the only person that could change any of that behavior was me, but the only person that wanted that behavior was me. So when I look at what I've created for myself over the years since 2009, is that I've created the ability to be flexible and the ability to know that I need to be completely in control of the business in such a way that it allows me. It allowed me back then to get out of work at 2 o'clock to do the school run if I had to, or to get out of the business at 11 a.m. if Callum, you know, fell in school and gave me that flexibility, or whatever it needed me to do. So I feel like I sacrificed speed. That's what I was trying, the word I was trying to come up with earlier on. I like getting there faster, you know, getting the business to a level faster because I had to, you know, look at the time that I was spending with my kids or at work. And I chose to spend the time, like I could have easily just left Limerick and gone back to Dublin and taken a job or started off something else and got into something. But my focus was to make sure that I did spend that week and take my kids for the week or 7 days or 10 days or whatever it was. And that became my focus during that time and my priority. And even now, you know, when I look at the business that we operate and how people work and the work-life balance or the synchronicity of family, social, training, work, like how do people mix all that in together? I actually don't think entrepreneurs generally give enough time to the family and give enough time to the other stuff. So, you know, that's where it's at for me. I think that's what's most important. Like, yeah, we'll do a new project, but I won't in any way sacrifice my time with the kids or with Siobhan or, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. No,
I talk about the body, the brain, the business a lot in this podcast because that's what I want, right? Mm. I want healthy body, fit mind, and profitable business.
Right.
Those are three things, right?
Yeah.
Tied up in the freedoms of like time, health, and finances. Okay. Those are the three goals I have. Spend time with my young daughter. It's most important. So it's very interesting to hear you say that because I've been trying to, and it's kind of like a journey I've gone on the last kind of like 18 months to 2 years since I had my daughter. Mm. I kind of just wanted to be there.
Yeah.
Because you get told this all the time. Oh, when they're young, time flies.
Yeah. Da, da, da.
And they're dead right. And I was like, why am I interviewing all these incredible people and not learning?
Right.
Why am I not putting this in practice? So I made a real deliberate, I did sacrifice a lot of speed and a lot of progress to do that, but I wouldn't change it. I won't change it. But it's very interesting because I was trying to retrofit that onto people I was talking to.
Okay.
You're one of the, you and Sahil Bloom and a few others are one of the few people that have kind of reflected it back to me. I was trying to force it onto people going,
right.
Now tell me what you do for your brain. Now tell me what you do.
Right.
I had to stop.
Yeah.
Because people are like, nothing. Nothing.
Mm, right.
It was like I was asking them like their PIN code. They were like, no, just I don't do anything. So like then that's really interesting how you can, the constraint became this beautiful forcing function for you to work in a different way.
Yeah. And I think, it's easy to join the dots going backwards, right? Like, that's, you know, I wonder, I don't know if it would have played out differently if I had the time. I wonder how it would have played out. I think the biggest irony about all of this is that I built an adults only destination so I could spend more time with my kids.
I love that.
Like that's
explain
truth.
That to me.
So when I went to open Bird Hill, Siren, my daughter, so I've two kids, Siren and Callum. They're 22 and 20 respectively. Siren's older and Callum's the youngest. And when I parked outside one day, there was a painter or somebody inside. And I said, just wait there now for a few minutes. And I just want to go in and chat to this guy and I'll be back out. So I did that. And then Siren asked me, was I opening another coffee shop? Because with her mom, we had opened four back then. That's why I was trying to count how many I've actually opened. So yeah, we had opened four at that stage and in Limerick City. So I said, yeah, I am opening another coffee shop. And she was like, oh, that means we're going to have to go there with you. And this was a real revelation moment for me because...
What age was she?
Well, it was around 2015. So 10 years ago now, she was 12.
Okay.
And
great wisdom in kids.
Great wisdom.
Truth.
Yeah, great honesty. And so probably 2012. And I said, actually, no. I think we should ban all children from this coffee shop so that... Well, number one, what it did was it forced me never to bring them there. Never just to pop in, you know, bring them with me, maybe sneak in the back door and go upstairs and talk to member staff or go in and collect some stuff. So it created this block, you know, emotional and mental block that I wouldn't spend time at work when I had the kids. And it was the best thing that it did for my relationship with the kids, you know, for me anyway. And also it helped me, you know, make sure that I focused on work when I was at work and I focused on the kids when I had the kids. So that's the ironic part about the whole thing. And I kind of wish when I see parents, some parents in a space and they're not giving their kids the attention, and the parents are caught in a conversation, or mates are caught in a conversation or whatever, and the kids aren't getting the attention. I just don't think that that's right. So I think that, I think we can all do better. I think there's a time for going for pancakes with your kids, and that's to a cafe space. And then there's a time where you need to actually spend time with your mate and have a chat, because they're going through something, right? And that's what the cafe space can become, or at least that's what somewhere like the old barracks in Burt Hill can become, that special place where if you want to be mindful about your conversation, you can actually have a real conversation and you can get deep into it and you can, you know, you can expose yourself, you know, in the way that you can be vulnerable in that space, and you can talk, and you can really talk, and you're not, you know, half turned with one hand holding on to your 4 year old while you're trying to engage in this.
You're doing your best, but it's just not the right venue.
Yeah. You're not given the 100% attention. So I felt that that's the one thing that I know, was really important for me at the time, was to make sure that I was giving my attention to the kids. And it's, I just think it's funny that, because, you know, the way to do that was to build an adults only. We get so much hate for it being adults only. And I'm just looking back at people going, you need to cop on, spend more time with your kids.
But it just makes so much, ironically, right? You're like, you're not saying spend less. You're just, I think it's really interesting because we live in such a world of distraction, right? Everyone's distracted all the time, but their phones mainly. But a lot of people are not there when they're there.
Yes. Yeah. They're not there.
They're there, but yeah, you know, scrolling and, you always see them pub, Mr. Ever, something to eat. Like, you know, they're sogging pints and the kids are just bored after tree. You're kind of going,
yeah.
There's a balance, right? Either go out for pints with your friends or go out with your wife and have a nice night out, or, you know, do something. But like, it's not the right venue.
Yeah.
Like, if you're there, be there, be all there. I think just there's this era of distraction. We're living in this era of just wanting to be distracted all the time by different things.
Yeah. But see, to me, it comes back as just being open and honest about your real needs.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's like whether I'm trying to be open and honest about running coffee shops or how much you need to invest or whatever it is, like my real needs at the time, and I knew my kids' needs were this. And I was going, okay, so that's what I need to do for me. Mm-hmm. And actually, I'm not preaching to people, but here's a really great excuse for you to go for coffee somewhere mm-hmm. where the kids aren't allowed. And we can just go for a chat, a real chat. At the time in 2015, a mate of mine went through a massive depression, and we were actually in Dublin. We were down in Ringsend at Lots & Co. You know, we went for coffee there, and we were trying to have a chat, and he was trying to, you know, just tell me what he was going through. And there were kids around, and there were kids pulling stuff off the shelves. And I just felt, only a week or two before that, I had mentioned on Twitter that I was considering this adults only idea.
Oh, so that got an interesting reply.
It was actually phenomenal at the time. I hadn't even opened. I mean, we got major press. But I remember speaking to him, and he was just also distracted by what was going on, and it meant that he couldn't get deep into his feelings. Yeah. So I think spaces like, I think adults only spaces for the sober curious,
yes,
in the cold light of day, don't exist, and we need more of them.
Agree. Yeah. Irish people have a great tendency of going to the pub and side by side having a pint and letting their feelings out there. But times are changing. People aren't drinking anymore. People are doing different things. You don't want to have to go to a pub and have an absolutely really shy coffee or have your sixth sparkling water in a row. You want to go somewhere nice. You want to go somewhere that's a little bit different, a little bit of an experience. And you're not sacrificing to do it.
Yeah.
You're actually going to enjoy it.
Yeah. And I think that's what... Okay, aside from all the, you know, the experiential stuff, let's say, that Burt Hill offers, I think that's what it also, like the other added value is that it creates that space for people to do that. And now you're not only distracted, you're not distracted by your own kids, and you're not distracted by other people's kids as well. And you've got that unique setting that you can do that. It's a sober setting. You can get into deep conversation, and you can really... understand the person that's with you. And I think that's, you know, we don't have enough of those spaces in society, really.
Why are businesses so afraid to be very clear in their messaging. We talked earlier about clarity. Clarity is the most important thing you can have in your business. Why are so few businesses willing to nail their colors to the mast like this and go, this is who we're for, this is who we're not for?
Because they want to be all things to all people. Yeah, I think they want to cast a broad net and try and capture as many people as they can. I think in one sense, well, that's I suppose the broad view of it. In another sense, they actually don't know who the customer is. Yeah, they actually don't know who the customer is. Yeah. So they don't, like, I did a TikTok yesterday. You're on about my TikTok. There's one comment and it was like, this guy just doesn't get it. And he's like, it's okay. He's never going to get it. You know, saying that he can get better coffee in Dublin. And I was like, yeah, you can. You can get it.
There's loads. I saw that this morning.
I was like,
drive to Dublin then.
Yeah, go drive to Dublin. But also, then I did a whole video on it. It's like, Here's the half dozen places you can go to and you'll get better coffee than we can ever make. But probably not. But yeah, right. But it's like, you don't get it. It's not just about the coffee. It's about the whole experience. And because I know who my customer is, that guy's not my customer. Now, guy or girl, I'm not quite sure. Could I bring that person in and educate them about coffee? Only if they want to be educated. But do I know who my customer is? Yeah. And we're very strident, I suppose, about targeting specific customers. And I think that's what's wrong maybe with other products or businesses. They don't actually know what their actual customer looks like. They don't have that persona up on the wall. You know, you do your draw a picture, what age profile, what are the inter likes, dislikes, are they single, married, kids, with kids, without kids, whatever. Where do they shop? What do they buy? What do they wear? What kind of lifestyle do they have?
But it's one of the best exercises you can do because it forces you to be honest. Yeah. I was literally doing it yesterday for the podcast. We were talking about it outside. I was literally going, right, who is my long-term customer? Mm-hmm. Might not be your customer right now, but who am I targeting the long-term? Yeah. And you have to be speaking to them. You have to be speaking their language.
Yeah.
You have to be able to talk to them at a certain level. You have to know where they are. Are they just on LinkedIn? Are they on TikTok?
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Are they in different places?
Yeah, where's their attention?
What other brands are they consuming? That's something I'm thinking about a lot now. Other brands are they consuming? Not just media, but what other brands? Where do they shop? Who do they want to be associated with?
Mm.
I've seen this really interesting crossover at the minute between like sport and culture and business. It's really interesting. Like you see the F1 getting really slick about how they market.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so good.
Yeah, yeah.
The paddock walk and you have celebrities and you have business people. And like there's a real melting pot there of like different things. And sport really is this beautiful bridge into the cultural world. I think there's something really interesting about that in terms of like how you actually talk to people. Like they've managed to bridge that really well, but they've done it not through like split times. Oh, he's so much faster than this one. Through this, the razzmatazz and the glitz and the aspiration.
Yeah, love
everyone
it.
Everyone wants to walk down the pit wall.
Yeah.
And how can you bring that into your business? That's what I keep thinking about. Going, right, if like F1 paddock walk was going to be an experience, what would it be like as a podcast?
Yeah.
You have to think like that.
But I love all that. That's all experiential stuff. You know, it's that tsunami of like different stimuli, right? So in that F1, you've like the smell of the paddock. You know what I mean? You have the buzz of it. It's tactile. You can like touch and feel. Like, and I love all of these different stimuli in business and in terms of how we create a product, you know? So that's like, that stuff really excites me and interests me, and how you can appeal to the psyche of people, you know, their inner child. You know, what is it that's going to get them excited and exhilarated and interested in what you do? And I think that's why what we do in Bird Hill, people don't get it till they've almost like till they've gone home. You know, they come along and we're there. Like I spend a lot of time looking at neuromarketing and the psychology of self and how people behave, behavioral sciences, what triggers them, all this kind of stuff. And when we build out stuff, I'm constantly thinking how they're going to experience this. And I think that's what, if you look at F1, which is a great example of how they've lap time, split laps, nobody's interested in that. They want to see the paddock rock. Who doesn't answer the question? Who's not going to talk on the mic? Yeah.
And up on social within 60 seconds.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's like,
master,
it's live
marketing.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I think people, you know, when we look at businesses, there's no formula as such, but there are certain methods, I think, that you can bring into business. There's a lot of understanding emotions. Like, emotions are huge, you know. So whether that's, you know, the emotions that we trigger in people over the adults only concept or price or whatever it is, or whether they love a brand or hate a brand, or whether they love an individual or hate an individual, or whether you're a bell end or whatever it is that, you know, the kind of abuse we're going to get online.
Make them feel something.
That's the biggest
thing. Yeah. And that's everyone's vanilla. Everyone's afraid to say what they really believe because everyone's afraid of getting cancelled, which is a very real thing. But everyone's just a bit in the middle.
Yeah.
They're afraid to actually say what they really think because there's this homogenization of, you know, people want to be, you know, either people going on the real extremes on the right and the left, whereas the middle is now this like weird area whereby logic is kind of not that common anymore.
Yes.
So you're kind of, it's really hard to find people you actually like resonate with.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
They're either in the middle and they're afraid to say what they want, or they're on the absolute extremes of the spectrum where you're like, I don't identify with any of these people. But that's when I think your content was so appealing. I was like, this is common sense business.
Yeah.
This is business 101. This is psychology 101. Mightn't agree with everybody. People might agree with you, but at least you have an opinion. At least they know about you.
Yeah. Well, you know? You need to get them talking about you. That's it.
And early stage businesses, that's the thing. I say this to people all the time. You have to keep telling your story. Why are we so hesitant to tell our stories?
I think people don't want to be on camera because they're afraid of how they look on camera.
It's a big part of it.
But you look the same in real life.
We can make you look a bit better, actually. Ben is so good. We've got this dramatic lighting.
Yeah.
You know.
But I don't know. It's like, this is what you look like in real life. So just talk to us through the lens and tell your story. I think there's a hesitation in terms of like how to start. And it's like, actually, it's not that deep. Just start. Just start telling your story. Just do a day to day, like this is what we're doing today. Just keep people updated. And you'll get into it more. And I think it's like everything, right? Starting is the hardest thing, right? Starting it is the hardest thing. And if you start, what you find is you get momentum, and momentum comes from engagement. It comes from other people asking you doing things. So I did this thing about, you know, what a 500 a year turnover looks like and how much money you can make. And then somebody has asked me recently, and I'll do it this week, but what does a cup of coffee cost? Like if it's a five, and it's like, okay, so there you go. So now people are feeding into the system, and I found the next thing to talk about because they've given me the content, right? And you learn from that. I think there is a hesitancy about people getting on camera for sure. Like whatever that is, people are camera shy, but you've got to just, and I think once you get over that, it's that. Like, do people know how to tell their story? I wonder, do people know how to tell their story?
I think you made a great point there, camera. It used to be voice. It used to be like, I was telling earlier about the different eras of podcasting. Oh, gee, I don't sound like that, do I? Oh, no. And now it is camera. Because you come in here and like there's big lights, there's cameras everywhere. It can be jarring if you're not used to it.
Mm.
But a video is where everything is.
Yeah.
All marketing is now video. You have to be doing video. You have to be more comfortable doing
it. Yeah.
I think people aren't comfortable. I think people are afraid to be imperfect. I see this quite a bit. People are 100%. afraid to appear that they don't know what they're talking about. They haven't got it all figured out. They're unwilling to admit, I messed up on that bad.
Yeah.
Ironically, they're the things that make you human. They're the things that make you more relatable.
More relatable, absolutely.
I was the same. Yeah. When I started, I ordered this. And I actually thought it was, I had a great story this morning. Rory from Mystery Shirt in the Box was in. He was in his first year. He ordered all the Christmas boxes, and the boxes, it was like 20 centimeters, and the box arrived as 25 inches.
Okay.
And he was like, how many did you order? He's like, 10,000. So they had to cut 10,000 boxes down to like 20 centimeters.
Do you want to do a 10 shirt deal, though?
Right?
Yeah.
So like, they're the things that you remember because you're like, oh, wow, I can see how that would happen.
Yeah.
So, but people are afraid. They feel like as a small business, they need to act like a big business. Yeah. Where I'm like, no, not your only power is being small.
Yeah.
I was like, you've just given away your only superpower, which is you.
Yeah.
You're the only superpower in the business. Your story is only, because people go, I'm rooting for him because I want to see him do well.
Do well or do bad. I want to see him fail.
Michael Corcoran, he's great, ex-Simo Reiner. He always says, booze don't block dunks. He loves it. Like he gets back into them all the time. He's like, oh yeah, great point. Yeah. And like, he's just so transparent and he's so forceful what he believes. And as a result, he's built one of the biggest social followings in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because he's not afraid. He's one of the few people I've ever seen do with a big brand.
Yes.
Because me and you, we can say pretty much whatever we want. Yeah, yeah. We're our own brands.
Yeah, yeah.
But with him to take a corporate brand and to be able to give it personality and give it life, that's an even bigger skill.
Yeah. But I think that's what has changed with media, is that you can, like, you know, we said this earlier on, years ago, was like, customers always right, and you get the 5-star reviews and it's like, great, great, great. And then you get the 1-star and they make a point and you're going, that's wrong. Like, you're wrong, actually, on that point. You can't, like, people give us a 1-star review in Birdale for having an adults only policy. And it's like, that's bullshit. You haven't experienced the place and you're giving us a 1-star review for an adults only policy. So, you know, it's like calling people out, I think, is, there's more value in that.
Yeah.
Actually being like that authenticity, going, I'm actually upset at the fact that you think, whatever, the price is expensive or you can't bring your kid. Like, and getting into that, I think there's more value in that, just generally, and actually being honest and going, well, this is why we do it. You know, like, I wish years ago I took receipts for the people who, you know, wanted us to fail. You know, when we opened Birdale, the journal did an online poll, and over 80,000 people answered the poll. It was like, would you go to an adults only cafe? Or what do you think of the idea? And something like 76% of the people voted yes. It was overwhelming.
Yeah.
That's
what I would have thought.
Yeah. It was the most validation you could ever get for the whole idea. Like, whatever comments people would make, but, you know, like 76% of the people that voted were like, absolutely, I'm in on this. And then there were all the comments and all the haters and all the, and I wish at the time I had taken the receipts, because, you know, you can get caught up in the whole thing as well. But it's interesting watching this thing of getting into the conversation and going, well, why not, or why? And I don't think people really understand stuff enough. You know what I mean? They don't get deep enough into it to want to understand it.
Well, it's easy to make an online comment. Yeah. It's always like user 777777777.
Yeah.
You're a bell in, Gary. Yes. Thank you for the valuable feedback. We'll take that on board. Thanks for commenting and helping the pod grow.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's always those people, like, whereas, like, I remember I had someone like go after me quite loudly online on LinkedIn, bizarrely.
Right. Wow.
I was on holidays and I was lying there.
Even worse.
Lying back watching football on holidays. A mate of mine texts me, goes, oh, see this?
Who's having a go at you?
I hadn't seen that. And ironically, it was a good post. Every month I share my figures. I share like my downloads, my this, my that. And people love it because it's real. And the person in question, phrase this carefully, the person in question had said, oh, you and all your toxic tech bro wannabe da da da. So I went back and I was like, look, everyone can misinterpret. I said, look, listen to a few episodes, you'll kind of see this and like that at all. Totally different, you know, blah blah blah. No, it's da 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 da. You're just male chauvinist, blah blah blah. And I was like, wow, okay, she's doubling down, that's fine. And went on me in the comments, and people who'd been on the pod were like, just go listen. Just listen, it's not that serious. And then I saw the same person at a conference. It was in the convention center, right? And the escalators go like that. They go like crossways. So I'm coming up, you're coming down, but we can see each other. Like, we're literally at eye line.
Yeah.
So that person is coming down and I'm going up.
Yeah.
And literally lock eyes with her and she just puts her eyes away.
Right.
I was like, come over and tell me now.
Yeah.
I was like, I wish you'd just come over and say, you're a prick. And I would respect the person more, because then you're standing by your convictions of going, nah, you are a prick. I think you're the prick for the reason. I go, fair enough.
Yeah, exactly.
At least. But if you want to go after me online and then you won't come up in person and say the same thing, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just, it's easy to sit behind the keyboard in your corporate job and have a go for people are trying to build something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's well, what's the say? They say you'll never get people who are jealous of you. People who, you'll never get put down by people who are doing better than you.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
No one built a statue of a critic. That's the one I think of all the time, and I think of that person. Done statues of you.
But I think it's all part of the mix, right? It's all part of the mix.
If you put yourself out there, and I've got more immune to it, if you put yourself out there, it shouldn't be, but there is a price to be paid. You made the perfect point there about you starting a business. There is a price to be paid. Money-wise, there's a price to be paid. There's a price to be paid of putting yourself out there, for good or for bad.
I think that's actually what might put people off when we're talking about why don't people tell their story, because they don't... Like Siobhan, my partner, is anxious about that. You know, and she runs a business, a really successful business, called the G Boutique down in Newcastle West. We'll give her a shout out.
Shout out, G Boutique.
She might be on the show, right? And it's a ladies' boutique, and the irony is that she's on stories all day, right? She's there standing up, wearing the clothes, modeling the clothes, and telling people you should buy this or not, but you could buy this, whatever. So she's always on camera. Hmm. But that's her safe space.
Because she's not talking about herself, she's talking about the clothes.
Yeah. And she doesn't want to get into any other detail that people might have the opportunity. Whereas when she looks at my content, and she sees people going on about adults only or whatever, and she knows that could touch a nerve of me because of my own kids and my own setup and my own fragility, let's call it, over my divorce or whatever, at the time, that might be, you know, a sore point. So, and she doesn't want to face into that. So I can understand why people, but you know, maybe as a word of encouragement to people, maybe that's the trick, is to talk about the stuff that don't, you know, this is how you tell your story. Talk about the stuff that you want to talk about. Don't talk about yourself, and talk about the cucumbers and the lettuce and the tomatoes and where they come from, and tell your story that way. And it's focused on that, and don't make it about you.
It's a great entry point. It's a brilliant entry point. Yeah. If you're not feeling comfortable, and then like you do, it's quite different. You take away the power by talking about it as well. If you want to face into the other stuff, you just take away the power by talking about it, because then people are like, oh, I was going to tell him this, but he's already just talked about it there and he's kind of explained it well. So, okay, I'll leave that one.
Yeah.
So there's loads of different ways around it. Mm. What are you building now? Because you seem like you've got multiple projects always on the go.
Right now we're building Grumble, which is gelato and crumble.
Okay.
Yeah.
Grumble.
We built it. We did a pop-up for it at the Bird Hill Coffee Festival. And we have a unit in O'Connell Street opposite where we have Gucci at the moment. And we're just waiting to get the unit back. The landlord was doing some structural works in the building. So we're building that. And I think I might turn that into a franchise option next year, maybe.
Gelato and crumble.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So apple crumble and gelato. So in O'Connell Street, Limerick, Gucci's on one side of the street, and there's this unit on either side of the street that's been sitting there since we took the building over, and it's just been annoying me. And I asked the landlord, could I do something with it? Not coffee. So then we created a brand and a concept that has taken inspiration from many other brands, and I just felt that this would be a kind of an all seasons type offering. So that's Grumble. We're opening in the University of Limerick, hopefully in September, maybe before that. That'll be called Cabiso. That's the new student life center in the middle of the university. We've created a brand for the university called Cabiso. Cabiso is a place in Africa where coffee comes from. So a region just like Gucci is, our other coffee shop.
Ah, I was wondering.
So there's a bit of coffee education. So we just lean into that gently.
Why a new brand again?
Because I didn't want to give the university Gucci. In terms of controlling price. So if we had to do some price deals in the university, I didn't want to just put a Gucci in there.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
And I felt also that if we didn't operate it, that the university, the Student Life Centre, could own that brand, and that anybody could operate it under that brand aesthetic. And they could. So we built a really, really cool brand aesthetic for them. And we've given it to them, and they've given it back, just going, will you run it for us?
Okay.
So that's really cool. And also we can have some different menu options there under the Cabiso brand that we couldn't put underneath Gucci, because Gucci predominantly is a coffee bar. Mm-hmm. So it's coffee to go, and that's its high street retail convenience offering. Whereas Cabiso is a university brand, and you know, whatever they want to do at it in time might suit them. But for now, if we decide we want to do baked potatoes or something like that, it could be Cabiso coffee, and it could also be doing baked potatoes.
You can experiment with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we have a bit more room, and there's more.
That's problems. Interesting. So I think people will be like, oh no, one brand. Whereas that's really interesting. And that makes a lot of sense. You can now experiment across different brands.
Yeah. So there are two small projects that I'm working on at the moment. And we've got this big project which is our new, relatively new warehouse in Limerick City. So that's on the Dock Road in Limerick City. It's 9,000 square foot. And
what's that called?
Right now, it trades under the old barracks.
Okay.
It will be called Coffee Culture.
Coffee Culture. Okay.
And Coffee Culture is the brand that I started in 2009 when I started my business.
Oh, wow.
So we've taken, I'm going to take.
OG, that. Back to the roots.
Yeah, I'm going to take that.
Playing the classics.
Yes. Yeah. You've no
it's
idea.
It's like the Oasis reunion here.
You've no idea how close you are when you say playing the classics. Yeah. So we're building out, a World of Coffee, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory coffee experience.
Okay.
On the Dock Road.
9,000 square feet.
9,000 square foot. We're expanding it to 12,000 with a mezzanine and an outdoor area. We're looking at about shy of 2 million investment in that space. And our roaster has landed. So I've bought the coffee roaster that's sitting in the warehouse. I'm taking the name Coffee Culture because it's the name that I started with back in 2009 to start the business off when I worked as a sole trader for 8 years and just delivered coffee education to people. And we educated like thousands of baristas and coffee shop owners over the years. And we're going to reimagine or recreate a new brand out of that identity. And it's going to be like I'm going all in on it. In terms of the aesthetic, the look, the feel, the stimuli, the experiences, what we're building there and what we're creating and building this a center for coffee knowledge in Europe or in the world. You know, like I think thinking that our customer is going to be in Limerick is thinking way too small, thinking our customers are going to come from Munster, way too small. Like we're at the gates of the Shannon Airport. So we want to be thinking like I've done, I'm sure you would do, right? I'm sure you've gone to a conference somewhere in Europe because you thought it might be beneficial to your business, right? So you'd go and you spend 2 days in London or Bristol. I don't know why Bristol came to my head, but I was thinking more into Spain or Lisbon is what I was thinking. So you'd go there and you might spend 2 days there, but you go visit something or a day. And I want to bring people from Europe and America into Shannon and have this coffee experience that they won't see anywhere else.
Love like, the ambition. This will be your masterpiece.
It'll be my signing off card. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Like, it's just a step bigger than what we've done in Bird Hill.
Yeah. But why not? Why not think like that? Because even if you get 90% of the way there, you'll be 80% further than you would have been if you just said, let's just open another Gucci.
Yeah. So we don't, like, now I'm at this tipping point where I don't need to do it, but I want to do it.
It's best point.
Yeah.
Why not?
It's a why not.
Yeah. What if?
Yeah. But again, it's coming back to that whole thing of actually giving people a deeper look at what coffee is and giving people bigger and better opportunities to stay within the industry long tail and not just come in as a barista at 17 or 18 and get you through college for 2 years, but actually, like, why is coffee roasting not on the syllabus in Calabria Street for part of education? Like, it's not that, like, coffee roasting itself isn't that complicated, right? Like, we can all cook, okay? But we'll cook to different degrees of competence and ability and we'll create different things, right? But we could certainly get coffee roasting onto the syllabus in LIT or Cahill Brewer Street or Shannon. And why can't people not get out of university knowing how to roast coffee, knowing how to source green coffee, knowing how to taste coffee and think of the industry in a different way and make it more sustainable in terms of more sustainable careers? Like, we can bring people in as a barista and we've educated them, like lots of guys in Bird Hill now. I'm thinking of Max and Katie. I'm thinking of Luis Estebao. I'm thinking of Luis Araya, Thomas. All the staff in Bird Hill know how to roast coffee because they should know how to roast coffee. If you're coming to work in Bird Hill, learning how to pour a latte art is like your entry level. We're now teaching you how to extract all these coffees from different countries all over the world, how to manipulate their flavors through the espresso machine so that you can accentuate acidity, accentuate body, or accentuate richness. But not only that, we actually can take those same baristas and teach them how to roast coffee so that now through roasting, they can actually deliver body, nuanced flavors, acidity, anything that it is that they want to do. And so how do we get there? Sorry, should I stop?
I thought you were full flow there. I was like, anyone listening, I just stopped to take a social clip and he just paused right at the moment. I was like, okay, I'll come back in with another question.
I got no forewarning. But the whole idea is to, like, the whole idea is to make this industry more long tail and more interesting for people, that they can see a career path and see an actual pathway and see where they are going in this industry. Like, don't just come in as a barista and get out after 2 years. Come in, learn how to make coffee, learn how to brew coffee, learn how to brew coffee better, learn how to brew coffee from 10 different countries of origin. Learn how to brew coffee that is natural processed, washed processed, honey processed, fermented. Like, what do all those different processes do to the coffee, and how do the flavors react? What does the customer experience in those flavors? What is going to happen in the roasting if you extend the roasting for an extra 30 seconds to a fermented coffee or to a coffee from Costa Rica? Like, how does that coffee behave in the grinder? So let's go to the next level. Mm-hmm. And not only that, like, how do we buy coffee from Ethiopia? How do we get it out of there without going through a broker? Like, so learn all this stuff. Like get into logistics of it. Like, we could have logistics, green buyers. We can have coffee roasters, head coffee roasters. We can have flavor masters, like sensory masters. Like, there's so many careers in coffee. That's not just, like, being a barista is just the gate in. It's like, it's just the entry point. There's so much long tail stuff. Become an entrepreneur. Do it for 10 years and then go open your own coffee roastery. Open your own coffee shop. You're going to ask me, who would I give €1 million to? And I'm going to say to you, the next person that wants to open a roastery. And it's, so it's
spoiler,
like...
Spoiler alert. Okay.
Yeah.
They're meant to listen to the end to get the juice.
Yeah. That's actually not the answer, but, it will be one of them. So I haven't spoiled the thing. But it's, how do you make the industry more sustainable?
It goes back to your point about the 100 grand, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? It's, are you building a business or are you building a job? Very different things. Before we go to our quick fire round.
We're there already.
Nice segue there. What's massively underrated when it comes to the coffee industry, and what's massively overrated?
Oh, in the coffee industry or? Yeah. Okay, what's underrated? How difficult it is to make coffee consistently. That's massively underrated. People have no idea. And you'll be surprised when we bring people into Birdtail and we walk them around our counter. So we've built an island in Birdtail so people can actually see the extractions, timings and all that stuff. When we explain to them the science just of the espresso, never mind the roasting, but when we explain to them the science, people are blown away. They're completely blown away. I think that's a huge insight that people just can't get their heads around. They can't get around how scientific it is and how complicated it is. And it's because we make it look easy. So what's overrated is how easy we make it look. Yeah. Because we make making consistently good coffee look easy. Mm. So people think, I can do that for 10 grand.
That's the dangerous thing in the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Quick fire round. Mm. What book has had the most impact on you?
I have a few books actually in this answer.
Brilliant.
So I think we need to really understand people's love languages in all senses of the word and for lots of different reasons. I think if you want to understand your staff, you need to understand what makes them tick and how they feel rewarded. And I think also if you want to have a sustainable relationship outside of work, and if you want to have, if you want to feel supported yourself, nothing will beat that other than the love of somebody else. So I think that's huge. I actually think that's huge. That whole having support, like loving your own kids, feeling loved, is immeasurable. It's huge, actually. Like, you can drive your business on as much as you want, but if you don't have someone that will listen to you, will support you, will encourage you, like, what's it all for? Like, and I think that's actually, I can't believe I'm so emotional about it, but like, I think it's huge. Like, people completely underestimate the need for someone there to share that journey with you, someone to be there to, hold your hand when you're feeling overwhelmed or when you're feeling objectified or when you're feeling harassed. and someone there to encourage you or to make you feel loved is huge. And I think that's like on a one-to-one in a relationship, but also, you know, when your children feel loved, when you feel loved as a parent, like nothing can replace that.
Thank you for sharing that, because I've actually had some conversations here and I left them just feeling quite hollow. So it's like they've achieved everything but missed the main goal. They've achieved the money, they've achieved the sale, but I wouldn't swap places with them.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating that more often than not, the addiction or the compulsion, they're running away for something or towards something, never quite sure what. So it's so nice to actually sit down with someone who has their priorities locked in and go, well, why would you do that if you lose everything along the way? I don't see the point. Yeah. I went to one of these dinners, like one of these high fancy entrepreneur dinners, and sitting looking around, and it was like the ghosts of Christmas future. Two divorces, doesn't see his kids.
Yeah.
An absolute bell end. You know, three heart attacks. You know, it was the cliche of the cliche of the cliche. And I just sat there going, you are not my people.
Yeah.
You are not people I want to promote on the podcast. You are not the what I want people to aspire to be, because that's the old method of like, oh, work hard, grind, you know, do all the crap, you know. And it is so refreshing for you to share not only that, but also the story earlier about, you know, your kids, when you prioritize that, you're like, right, they are the priority number one. They will come first no matter what.
Yeah. So anyway, I had to write down my notes because I thought I wouldn't get the names right. But Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman, I think, is very powerful. I think you understand a lot about yourself in terms of how you want to be loved. And I think you can understand a lot about your partner or your children in terms of how they want to be loved, and how they need to receive love and how you need to give them love. There's a really good book as well, because I'm strong on behavioral sciences, and I haven't seen it come up much in reviews of other people talking about books, but it's Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People.
It's hugely underrated. Hugely, because it's kind of one of those ones that everyone knows about,
yeah,
but so few people have read.
Yeah, and actually, because I think the headline is a little bit disconcerting. It's like, oh, how am I going to manipulate people? It's actually not that at all. It's more to do with how you listen and how you listen and how you feedback information to people and how you get them to understand where you're coming from. And they might be coming from the same place that you're coming from, but you just need to get them to understand that. So I think that's a really, really good book. And the other one then is Influence, Robert Cialdini's The Psychology of Persuasion. And again, it's about understanding people and where they're coming from. So I'm biased towards the neurological stuff, obviously. And I think that we need to be more emotional in business and understand people from their hearts out. And, you know, that, like, whether it's pricing architecture or the psychology of their behavior or the consumer behavior and the paths that they go on. But I think there are three books that I would really read and read over.
I actually need to reread those, because I read Influence by Cialdini and I thought it was just spectacular. And I read How to Win Friends and Influence People years ago. 20 years ago.
Yeah, you see, this is where we go. But it's the kind of one you read at the start.
Exactly.
Right. But you go back and pick up a chapter and you're like, oh man, this is so relevant right
now. But it's remarkable that it was written so, because I only picked up in an airport I think 2 months ago, I picked it up. It's like, oh wow, I must reread that.
Yeah.
I looked at when it was published. I was like, no.
Yeah, it's like 60s or something, isn't it? 70s?
I think it's even earlier. Yeah, okay. I'm like, how did he nail that? I think especially after COVID, you know, people's desires have changed. People's way they want to work, the way they think about work has changed.
Yeah.
So you have to understand yourself. What's motivating you, first of all? Because if you don't understand what's motivating you, you summed it up beautifully there about your partner and your kids and just everybody. You don't understand what's motivating you. How is anyone else meant to understand you? How's your staff meant to understand? What does Alan want?
Yeah.
I don't know. Today's here. Tomorrow's there. If they don't understand where we're all going, you've no chance.
Mm-hmm.
What's your superpower?
My superpower is ideas. Yeah, I think it's definitely ideas. I'm an ideas man. We built this Kibiso brand for the UL, and I was going, damn, that's a fucking cool brand. I want that brand. And
it's just too good. I just can't stop producing hits.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, Jesus. No, but I haven't seen none of them stick, but I have no shortage of ideas. I think that's my superpower. Yeah, if there's such a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, and you kind of have to keep relearning this, like you just have to keep churning them out because it could be 20 ideas before the one will stick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's funny. So I spoke to Susan in my office the other day, Susan Sheehan. She loved this because she's into podcasts. I was just like, entertain me for a minute, right? On the cash flow. I was like, if I do this and I put 100 grand here, what'll happen? You know, because I had an idea for something. And she was like, right, okay, I'll come back to you. So she did it. And she came back and she's like, what are you thinking anyway? And I was like, ah, it doesn't matter.
It's already gone.
It's already gone.
I've already moved on to something new.
Yeah, I had a different idea. By the time she came back to me after lunch, and I was like, oh yeah, no, that. What was that? Oh, that was this morning. Like, forget about that.
My ChatGPT, God bless. I named her Sophia. I was like, God bless Sophia, because every idea, especially when I'm driving home after podcast, I'm like, hey, Sophia, I have this idea for the thing. Can you draw me up a business plan for this? And then I did this thing at the weekend where I was like, what's your top 5 blind spots?
Okay.
And I was like, I asked ChatGPT, I was like, you've known me now for quite a while. Where are my top 5 blind spots?
Wow.
You're great at ideas, but your execution could be much better.
Well, but like, look, that's a story for life. These are easy.
Harsh, but remarkably true.
Yeah.
What's one daily habit that has attributed to your success?
Going training. Yeah. I love training after work. I don't like training before work.
We're the exact opposite.
Yeah, but our business starts at 6 a.m.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right? So I have people in the WhatsApps from 6 sometimes. Our shops are open at 6. So if I'm up that early, sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. Like, if I'm up that early, I'm thinking work straight away. As soon as I wake, I'm thinking work. I'm checking the phone, bum, bum, bum. Any crisis today that I need to deal with straight off, I'm in. And then I find I'm locked into... You know, I can't focus on training if there's stuff going on in work that I haven't got off my roster.
Okay. Yeah.
So the way it works for me is we work all day and then I shut off. Right? So it shuts me off from work. I disarm and it's 4 o'clock and it's like, right, I'm off to tribe and I'm going to go do my CrossFit or whatever it is session. And I'll take that in and that cuts me off from the day. And then I might go and do yoga and then it might be an hour. We might go to Drive Manger Callum or whatever it is that I'm doing. And then I'm finished work.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, so we get all the work done.
That makes sense. Yeah. And you got to work around your schedule. So I'm up at 5 every day, train at 6:30 every day. I had to miss it. I was telling Ben earlier, I had to miss it today and it bothered me.
Yeah.
Really bothered me because I'm doing it after this.
Right.
So it'll be like, might be 6 and we're doing a session. That's nearly the middle of the night for me.
Yeah.
So I'll do I've got 12 by 400s today to do on the track on the way home. And I'm like, oh, it's going to be hard graft. Because I told you earlier, if I break my routine, it bothers me.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. You got to find your flow, right? You got to find whatever works for you. This is kind of an unusual question. And it's kind of like, who inspires you? Who do you think is inspiring in 2025? But what entrepreneurs should everyone be following in 2025?
Oh, shit. Actually, yeah, I saw this question coming up and I didn't have a...
Who do you look at and you kind of go, they figured it out, apart from yourself?
Well, let me answer it this way. Paddy Campbell came to visit me in Bird Hill this week. I don't know if you know who Paddy Campbell is.
Beauties. Oh, you're putting me on the spot there. If I didn't know that answer, they'd be like, he doesn't even like business.
Or is he Ireland's most celebrated sculptor?
Oh.
Right. So Paddy Campbell left Beauties when he was about 60 years old. And he has spent the last 24 years sculpting.
No way.
Right. And he is the most celebrated Irish sculptor.
What?
He's the only Irish sculptor with a piece that has been purchased and is now on exhibition in Florence. So at 60 years old, he decided that he didn't want to be part of Beaulieu's anymore. And what he wanted to do was go and paint. And then his painting took him on a journey of painting, oils, all this kind of stuff. And then someone said to him one day, you should sculpt, it would help your painting. And then he started sculpting. And he realized that he had a great three-dimensional visualization skill.
That is wild.
So I met him on Monday and I was inspired by him because he's 84 and he's still involved in Beauties and curious about their progress and involved on the board.
Love that.
So, like, follow Paddy Campbell.
Bloody am. Gonna have to get him on the pod. That's one of the best stories I've heard all year. Curiosity and speed are the two traits I look at now in a founder.
Curiosity and speed.
Curiosity and then be able to put that curiosity to work at speed.
Okay.
Like, curiosity is like, it's just invaluable.
Yeah.
Him wanting to know that, like keeping his mind active.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, The question you hinted at earlier, I'm going to give you 1 million.
Yeah.
If you only invested in one person or one company, who is it?
Orca.
Orca.
Yeah. Okay. You don't know of it, but I want to build it.
Oh. Go on. I'll let you away. This is kind of a cheat, but I'll let you away with it. Go on.
Well, look, I'll give it away. I want to build this. I want to build this escrow business.
Okay.
So what we're finding is, let's say someone wants to open a coffee shop and they want to get a certain amount of work done, but the tradesman doesn't know if they've got the money.
Mm. Yeah.
But they want to get the work done. And they don't want to pay out the money to the trade. They don't want to pay everything up front because they're afraid the work won't be done. Right? So the problem is, tradesman doesn't know if the client has the money. Client doesn't know if the tradesman is going to get the work done. How do we fix that? Can we come up with a solution where you have something like OrcaPay? I've built it. I built it years ago. I just never actually had a million to put it together. Where both parties can put the money into escrow and it gets released through milestones. And they can both nominate the milestones through consulting with each other. First phase, second phase, bum, bum, bum. Mm. And keep 10% back. And then it gets released 30 days after. And how do you build an escrow fund? So whether you want to buy a car off Dundale for 20 grand. Mm-hmm. And you don't just want to rock up with 20 grand in cash and go, here you go, Davey, here's your 20 grand. Actually, I'm going to keep back too, just in case it doesn't pass its NCT. So how do we do that? I want to look at a project where we have a thing called an escrow fund, and you could, regardless of what it is that you're building or creating, or if you, let's say you engage somebody for a service, like an auditor or something like that, but you're not sure that they're going to do the job that you want them to do, but you want them to know you've got the money. And they know they're going to get paid if they do it right. So they can see the money and they can draw it down in stages. And then when everybody's happy.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah.
I'm liking it.
Okay.
That's good. That's really good. Yeah. Because, that's so true. There's so many, it could be speeded up so much. Just the transparency of like, money's in escrow. It's going to be this much money, 10 grand. Grand, okay. The milestone is first fix, second fix.
You're building an extension. It's 150 grand. The builder comes in with his quote, 150 grand. Here's all the stuff. And then you go, okay, lodge all the money. Boom. Send a drawn account from the bank. You put into this escrow fund. That's what I think. I want someone to help me with that.
Okay. Well, you're in the right place. We're sitting here in Baseline. I think Eamon will be able to hook us up with a genius wizard techie that can build that. If you're starting from zero again, you probably might just have answered this question, but we'll go anyway. If you're starting from zero again in 2025, what would you do?
I would, have I no money? How much money have I got? Zero.
Zero. Well, you have whatever. You have a bit of seed money. Maybe not 100 grand to open a coffee shop. But, you know, that's up to you to figure out. Are you serious about this or not?
Yeah. Oh, listen, straight onto TikTok or Instagram, start telling the story about what I want to build. That's it. Start there. And generate a community.
So you'd build a brand. You'd build a personal brand. Media brand.
First of all, I'd build a brand. Yeah, that's it. If I'd have to lean into it myself, I'd build a personal brand first. But you'd have to remove yourself from that. You got to make yourself redundant as fast as possible. I'd lean into the brand that I'm a big brand builder. So Gucci, The Old Barracks, Grumble, Cabiso, Orca, like all of those brands, I'm big into brand building, and I believe that people buy brands, but I also believe we're in a small country, so you need a persona, you need a face for the brand to get it off the ground.
I think your social media in the next 6 to 12 months will be very big. So no pressure.
Yeah, so no pressure.
No pressure. I'll be texting you on December 31st this year going, hey.
Yeah, look, what are you talking about?
How many 100,000 you at? Yeah. But if you look at Nadia, I always use Nadia as the example. Ashford Motors, just spectacular.
Yeah.
just Brilliant. Gets social better than anyone.
Absolutely.
Just understands it, the nuances, the stories, the plays, the trends. She just gets it. Like, so I think you're dead right. I'm expecting big things from this next question, by the way.
This is
teed up perfectly for you.
Right.
What do you believe that other people would find weird or strongly disagree with you on?
That divorces and separation are as big a contributor to the housing crisis than immigration.
Okay, tell me more.
Well, I'm in a separated relationship. My partner's in a separated relationship. My ex-wife is in a separated relationship. Her partner's in a separated relationship. We're all living in individual houses. And that goes on all over the country. And nobody talks about it. There's nothing we can really do about it. And it's just going to keep happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good answer, to be fair. Debate on that, TikTok.
Off you go.
Damn, you're good. See? Told you. What's been your worst investment?
I haven't had many bad investments, and I say that in terms of financially, because I haven't had the money to invest.
Mm-hmm.
That's the honest truth. I've never had money. My worst investment is probably when we got involved in the hotel in Drumminier in Nina.
No way. I know it well.
You know it well. So, and we didn't even have money to invest in it at the time. So, a friend of my dad's had decided to get involved in buying this hotel from the Collisons, from Dennis Collison. Dennis decided to retain a share, so he retained 12.5%, and then everybody else bought up other portions to make it up to 88.5% or whatever the numbers, 87.5%. So there were five or six owners or whatever way it worked out.
Sounds good. That sounds like a recipe for success.
Exactly. Clusterfuck of sorts. And I think, so that was my biggest learning, actually. My biggest learning was never to do a partnership ever again. And although that might mean that you do everything slower, it means you have much more control. So in terms of investing time, energy, and money, that was a big learning lesson. So we got involved in the hotel back in 2001, and we ran it for 2 or 3 years. And then I realized after a year and a half, this was an absolute disaster. Too many opinions, too many people, too much pillow talk going on with wives of business owners who were hearing stuff down at the local GAA pitch.
You know what you should do? Those famous words.
Oh my God.
You know what you guys should do?
So we ended up getting out of that like fairly unscathed, but having put whatever money we did have at the time and surrendering earnings and pay to keep putting money into the business. And that was my biggest learning. That was a big, I suppose, waste of time.
Mm-hmm. But the lessons you got out of that is huge. Yes. And on paper, that had unlimited potential.
Yeah. Back then, right? Back then in 2001.
For sure.
Like the
go-go times were just starting to go-go.
Yeah. Right.
And Drumminier was like,
it was like
little Dublin 4. Like everyone was coming down. I used to spend summers down there. Yeah. Everyone's coming down. It was the place to be. And like it didn't have a whole lot. So the hotel was central to a lot of it, you know. Yeah. So it, on paper, but like six on.
Oh, absolute nightmare.
But think of all the expertise. Think of all the stakeholders be driving it forward. Yeah. It's just.
I think I was 24, maybe 25, and all I ever wanted to be was a hotel manager. Like going to college, I just want to be a hotel manager.
And that's the dream. And on paper down there would have been.
Yeah, but you know what we used to do in college was we used to do these case studies and business studies. Oh man, I fucking love them. I was really good at these, right? It was, you know, you get the accounts for a hotel in the country and it's losing money and what are we going to do? How are we going to turn it around? Yeah. And I remember being on the road into Drumminier, and you arrive in Drumminier March morning, mist is lifting off the Shannon, a couple of swans,
romantic as it gets.
Oh man,
you weren't wrong.
No,
in fairness, like, that could have become one of the best wedding venues in Ireland. Could have become one of the best spa hotels in Ireland. Yeah. There could so many ways that went. There is external factors too. Drumineer fell off a cliff.
Yeah,
Drumineer just fell off a cliff.
Yeah,
during when the crash happened. Oh my god, it was bleak.
So yeah, so I think that has been my worst investment, if you could call
it.
Yeah.
On a lighter note, what's been your best investment?
I'd say my investment in my relationship. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I feel very strongly about that. And that's given me great support and encouragement. And love.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. Right, leave me with some advice. What's the best piece of advice you've heard in the last year? So I'm putting a spin on it, right? Not just like, oh, what would you do differently?
No,
tell me the best bit of advice in the last 12 months you've heard.
Blaise Brosnan said one day, run your business with your head and run your family with your heart. It's powerful.
That is powerful.
And Paddy Campbell told me that risk is the salt of life.
Okay. A little bit more obtuse, right? Yeah. Chew on that one. Yeah. No pun intended.
Just don't put too much salt.
Okay. You've dropped two knowledge bombs right at the end.
There you go.
Before you go, where can people learn more about you and business?
So follow at Old Barracks Coffee Roasters on Instagram and probably the same handle on TikTok.
He's good on TikTok. Follow there.
They can follow me and they can send me messages at my own Instagram if they like, Alan Andrews.
Nice messages. Alan, don't call him a bellend.
I get those. I think they're funny. It's great. I looked up, I had to go look up how do I do like curse words with emojis so I could reply to people. I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. This is novel.
Emojis are the best.
Yeah. So Alan_Andrews_IE, I think is what it is. But anyway, you'll find me there. People can WhatsApp me, 087-294-3839. Off you go. Yeah, no problem.
Definitely never had that before.
Yeah, send me a message. Yeah, if you're thinking of opening a coffee shop, if you think I can offer some value in terms of how you run your business in the coffee business, and you think that there's some word of advice that I could give you, or you got some inspiration from the talk, send me a message, and I'd love to hear from you. If people send me bell ends, we just block them, it's easy, you know, so yeah. That's where they find me. Or come to Bird Hill or come to Gucci Coffee Bars.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Come see in the flesh.
Yeah.
Just don't bring the kids. Alan, that was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Great.